This podcast episode is brought to you by Paleo Valley's Organic Extra Virgin Olive Oil. Now, we all know that many olive oils are cut with seed oils or that they are rancid, and so it's not always easiest to find a quality and properly sourced olive oil. Yes, in case you didn't know, many store-bought olive oils are diluted or blended, compromising both taste and quality, and may even cause rancidity. I'm really glad that Paleo Valley's extra virgin olive oil remains pure and unadulterated, sourced from a single organic valley in Greece. Paleo Valley ensures freshness and nutrient content by packaging their olive oil in dark glass bottles. At a certain point, I stopped using extra virgin olive oil, but once our practice started working with people with chronic inflammatory response syndrome, or SIRS, we started recommending it for the reduction of TGF-beta-1. It is an immune system marker that shows inflammation both for COVID-19, SIRS, and actually many other illnesses. So if your TGF-beta-1 is high, you may want to try incorporating a little bit of extra virgin olive oil. Make sure to check it out. It comes in a 2-pack package. And remember, all Paleo Valley products are guaranteed with a money-back guarantee. Go to paleovalley.com/NWJ to get 15% off your order. Thanks for supporting companies that support this podcast. Hey guys, it's Judy from Nutrition with Judy. Thanks for joining me today. While you're here, please make sure to like and subscribe. If you're listening to this on podcast, please make sure to follow the show. My name is Judy Cho, and I'm board certified in holistic nutrition. And I have a private practice where we focus on root cause healing, and that often starts with the Carnivore Cures all meat elimination diet. Our goal for our clients and our community is to get people to live their best lives, mostly symptom free. Today, I had the pleasure of sitting down with Craig Emmerich. Most of you know Craig and Maria Emmerich as recipe creators. Craig is so brilliant in the science, and Maria knows a lot of science too, but Maria is obviously known for all her creative keto, carnivore, and PSMF and kid recipes. It was such a pleasure to sit with Craig and just chat with him about the science of carnivore and protein and even his journey. We talk a lot about what he's been going through and his journey on a ketogenic diet or a carnivore diet and how he's still struggling with his health. He was so honest that I really grew so much more respect for him because he is just sharing as he is. And you can see that in this interview. He talks about some of the things he's passionate about, such as protein and carnivore, and how eating at a maintenance dose is so different than eating when you're trying to lose weight or reverse insulin resistance. There's just so much science to it and nuance for each individual person. He talks about the frustrations of how they are now being classified as protein-sparing modified fast pushers, but that they are actually much more than that when they also have kid recipe cookbooks and keto cookbooks and even carnivore cookbooks. Craig Emmerich is the author of the best-selling book, Keto. He also is an international speaker and educator. He's the owner of Keto Condo and KetoAdapted.com. Craig and his wife, Maria Emmerich, have written over 20 books and have been in the low-carb carnivore keto space for over 20 years. Craig graduated and worked as an electrical engineer, but spent the last 15 years researching nutrition and working with thousands of clients alongside his wife, Maria Emmerich. We also talk beyond the science of what we see in our clinical practices. Craig and Maria have been around for a very long time. And while they share their N equals one and the science, they also see the stories that of the people they work with. They see what happens when we hear things on the internet about fruit and honey or adding carbs and what it really does to their clients. We also talk about how high fat without the protein is not ideal, or high fat may not be ideal if you're trying to lose weight. We talk about hormones in that context as well. This is such a powerful conversation because it talks about how diet alone may not always be the answer. I hope that this conversation really just gives you a lot of real talk, which I know I mostly do on Cutting Against the Grain, but this conversation has been so enlightening to me about the realness that Craig and Maria share. And even though he doesn't feel his best some days, he's still wanting to help people and why he came on my channel to share his story, share about the importance of the diet and what you need to truly heal. Okay, guys, let's get into the interview. Hi, Craig. I'm sure most people that are watching and listening to this know you, but I'm so excited to have you on and just chat with you. If you can introduce yourself for the people that are listening and watching.
Well, thank you, Judy, for having me on. I really appreciate it. My name's Craig Emmerich. Most people probably know my wife better, Maria. We've written about 20 some books now. Keto, carnivore, all of the different and protein sparing modified fast. We've gotten some books recently on that. She started on this path like 23 years ago with her own health issues and found essentially keto, you know, low carb keto, and saw big improvements in her health. And she started having everybody ask, what are you doing? And so it kind of, you know, built off of that. It took me a little longer, like maybe 4 or 5 years to come around because I have German background. I like to brew my own beer. So it was real hard for me to transition on some of those things. But I just felt better when I ate this way. So I eventually just said, you know what? I want to eat this way all the time. It's why should I feel crappy on the weekends when I eat whatever, right? And so I've been eating this way for like 16, 17 years,
wow,
eating full keto. And we adopted our sons 10 years ago now, almost going on 10 and a half years. And they eat what we eat. So, you know, and they're thriving and growing like crazy. But yeah, we get into a little more of our story later. But, you know, at the time I had no health issues, and that's why I didn't transition it to this lifestyle like she did right away. But then about 8, 9 years ago, I did start having my own health issues. And turns out I had Lyme disease. And then I actually had to take my diet kind of to the next level of carnivore.
Let's actually talk about your health journey since it just came up. How did you get diagnosed with Lyme? What happened there?
Yeah, so I traced the initial symptoms right to around when we built our new home, which is on this beautiful piece of land, but it's, you know, like 40 acres of really old woods. And there was quite a few ticks around.
Okay.
And I was out there a lot. And I, you know, I can't trace it to one tick bite, but I know I had ticks on me quite a bit in that time. And didn't think too much of it. You know, we didn't take ticks were pretty common in our area in Wisconsin. So then I just started having this back pain in my lower back that I thought was an old football injury from high school because I have this damaged disc and it would like shooting pain down my leg or something. But it was more of a stiffness and soreness, and it was always there. And it slowly moved up my back, into my neck, my shoulders. And it got to the point, I think this is about 6 years ago now, where my son, who at the time I think was 6, and he could throw a football farther than I could. I'm like, something's not right here. Like this is not normal. And I got a Western blot Lyme test, which I now know Western blot Lyme tests are like 80% false negative, right? They say you're negative, but you really do have Lyme. They're just not testing for it. Took another year or more to finally get the proper test done, found out I had Lyme disease, and then I started treatment protocols for that.
And then what was the second test that you took?
It was an Igenix.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Galaxy also makes a good one now.
Right.
So those are probably the two best Lyme tests.
Okay. And then after you did the protocol, did it help with your healing?
So, you know, I don't have a typical case of chronic Lyme or a lot of these things. So first of all, I think what probably aggravated it to get to a worse state than it needed to is the fact that I've been eating keto and very low inflammation diet. You know, I always probably, even my keto back then was, you know, my vegetables were like some onions on my burger. And, you know, like I was very meat based even back then. For all that time that I was developing these symptoms, I think I let it go so long because I was already eating this way and I was able to manage it and manage the pain much longer than I should have let it. We get clients all the time that just going to keto from Standard American Diet really helps their Lyme pain, right? So I was that way the whole time, you know, I have been for like 17 years. And I think it was a blessing and a curse. It helped me manage the pain, but it also allowed me to neglect dealing with it much earlier than I should have.
So at a certain point, I'm hearing from you that you realized the diet alone wasn't enough to...
Yeah. So, I mean, what happened was then when I was properly diagnosed, I looked for everything to try to, you know, fix my problems, right? And I'm open to trying anything, you know, traditional and non-traditional. And I have done just about everything you can imagine. You know, I did the, you know, at the time, which It's really interesting how the space has evolved in their understanding of how to treat chronic Lyme and some of these conditions. Back then, it was hammer it with antibiotics, right? And that's, you know, like Klinghart, and you know, it was, I was on three high-powered antibiotics taken simultaneously for 9 straight months, and I didn't see any difference myself. That was just one of the protocols. You know, I was doing the Cowden protocol. I did all of that for 9 months. I did had cavitation surgery where I had infection in my cavities where my wisdom teeth are pulled. So they opened up the jaw, they scraped that out, put ozone in, had a root canal pulled that also had an infection in it because Lyme can hide in infections and in biofilms and those things. So I had all that done. I had, you know, I did some pretty aggressive antiparasitic protocols. There's so many, I can't even tell you how many treatments and things, and really nothing moved the needle much for me at all, traditional and non-traditional. And I always had high inflammation. That's originally how I figured out, okay, something's really wrong here, is after the Western blot Lyme test said, no, you don't have Lyme, tried to figure out what it could be. I just went into a functional doctor. And I said, you know what? I understand a decent amount about biology. Here's all the tests I want run. Just run all of these, and I'm going to see if there's something here that sticks out. And pretty much everything was normal except my red blood cell counts were a little low, and my CRP was like 50.
Wow.
And I'm like, okay, there's a problem here. You know, my inflammation is that high, eating the way I do, the lifestyle I had, something's wrong. And that's when I finally got the good Lyme test done. But my inflammation's always been high. And so I think, you know, I mean, obviously I have no data on this, but I think what happened with me was Lyme triggered this, you know, storm with my immune system and immune dysfunction that drove this chronic inflammatory response syndrome, SIRS, type of environment in my body. And it went on for so long that it's triggered an autoimmune response, which what's autoimmune? It's your immune system attacking good cells, right? And so since my immune system was like crazy, like attacking stuff, because it's got this, it was just on, like kind of like long COVID is kind of similar. Right. The immune system just doesn't shut down. It started attacking good cells. And now I have ankylosing spondylitis, which is an autoimmune disorder that it's kind of like arthritis of the spine and hips and a little bit shoulders and stuff. So most of my neck is now calcified and infused. And so most of the vertebrae are fused together with calcium. And so I think that's kind of, you know, what happened in my situation.
Well, one, thank you for sharing your story. It's hard because in the wellness space, and we're both in the same wellness space, and I think you bleed into so many more diets too, but you hear so much that diet fixes everything, and that if you eat a low inflammatory diet, it fixes everything. And I'm sure you saw it too, but you work with some of the sickest people and you start questioning, actually, it's not fixing everybody fully. And I think it does a lot. Like, there's no question that nutrition is so important, but I think at a certain point, people have to realize sometimes it's beyond the diet and it can be environmental. And once your immune system is really on and inflamed and it can't stop that process, you have to do something. Otherwise, it's going to start degrading the body and the mind.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's exactly the situation I ended up with. And again, I think the diet helped mitigate the symptoms enough to allow me to neglect it. But also even, you know, 5 years ago, when I finally got the Lyme diagnosis, I went strict carnivore because I knew people like Charlene Anderson, who's been carnivore for like 20 plus years to deal with her chronic Lyme pain. So I knew about those stories and that information. I just said, okay, let's go. And it did help. You know, that even, you know, took my pain down a little, was more manageable with carnivore. But again, you got to address those root causes of those problems. Or, you know, it's not going to just go away with diet, with some of these autoimmune and certain conditions. For some people, it might. You know, some people, you know, they can see full reversal of symptoms with autoimmune conditions with diet. But some it's not. And I think that's a really important message that has to get out there. I think there's a lot of people in this space that will kind of put that out there as just eat keto and everything will be fine. Or just eat carnivore and everything will be fine. I'm not going to name any names. I'm not here to do that, but I think it's important to understand, like at KetoCon this year, there was a panel and somebody asked about Lyme And one of doctors, the influencers in this space, said, well, if you just eat keto, you'll be fine. You won't get Lyme. And I was like,
what? Oh my gosh.
No, that's like, I just don't even know where to start with that. Like, right. it's a you know, spiral keto. It gets injected into you. It's not something diet's going to stop from happening. Right. And I even saw another influencer that said that, you know, Dr. Sarah Hallberg, we're friends with them. And we were actually, and it breaks my heart because we were trying to help her get a book written with Victory Belt shortly before she died. And I overheard somebody say, and again, another influencer said, well, if she just didn't eat plants, she went to
get gosh. No and way.
It's that kind of thing. And number one, that, I mean, you give people a false sense of hope, right? Oh, yeah. I just eat carnivore. I won't get cancer, or this cancer will go away. It's those kind of things that I think is important to understand that this is not, you know, that's kind of like snake oil salesman, like just do this and it'll fix everything. That's not what this is. It's a very beneficial thing for a lot of people, but it's not this magic pill.
Well, I thank you so much for sharing this, and it's so powerful. Emotionally, I see that all the time with my clients where they'll say, but so-and-so said they ate carnivore for 15 years and they fixed it. Why am I so broken? Or this other person did that and I know, how come it's not working for me? And then you start realizing, well, there's more to it than oftentimes the diet. Again, the diet is so important. But I think we need to have really honest conversations in the wellness space. A lot of these influencers aren't working with people individually, or they don't have that illness story. Then they have nothing to challenge them other than these sensationalized stories. I mean, people want to share just the healing stories, but there's a lot of people that don't. Otherwise, I wouldn't have a practice. If carnivore works so well, my book would sell, your cookbook would sell, and no one needs us, right?
But, we wouldn't have a job because we just, but in our keto book, just Keto, the Complete Guide.
Yes, yes, I have it.
The nutrition one. Oh, thanks. I think we wrote that 6 years ago. Okay. And one of the things that right in the beginning, I made this disease tree because there are a lot of components, right? It's not just, you know, the trunk of it is like insulin dysfunction is a good part of it. But, you know, the leaves, the end result are cancer, are, you know, autoimmune conditions, or, you know, all these problems, right? But the roots that drove this, nutrition's one of them.
Right.
But there's light exposure, getting enough sun exposure, you know, common sense sun exposure, exercise, you know, environmental things like, you know, my wife is amazing helping people with like cleaning out their environments and getting all the toxins and, you know, the scented candles and all these things that are in your environment that are just not good for your body either. You know, there's not smoking, or, you know, there's all these inputs, right? And all these inputs can lead to those outputs of disease and dysfunction. But, you know, it's not a magic pill. You know, the diet's just one piece of it. And there's a lot of things you might have to work through to see relief.
Yeah,
and you may not get full relief, you know.
Yes, I think there's so much more to the body healing than just nutrition. There's definitely nutrition. We need the raw materials. I think you guys do a great job of sharing how protein has so much of the nutrition. And I think that's wonderful. But there's more than that. It's also the way you view the world. I mean, when we view something and we are stressed and we think something is negative or it triggers a trauma response, we release more cortisol and that affects our entire body. So there's so much more to it. And so I really, really applaud you for bringing this up because it kind of goes against your brand in a sense, right? It keto, carnivores, but you want to really help people and it shows because you're sharing your story of it's not going to fix everything. It's such a powerful tool, but sometimes it's not enough.
Exactly. Whenever we talk with clients or people who are interested, you know, a lot of times they'll comment and obviously be like, I have XYZ condition. Will this fix it? And we're always very careful when we talk with them that yes, we would be happy to help you.
Right.
You know, here's some examples of what it can do, and it can help you too. Not will, like, you know, there's people say, yeah, this will help. She's got to do this, and it'll all be gone. No, it can help. It can help some level. Maybe it's, you know, a little bit of relief. Maybe it's a lot of relief. But there's no will in this when it comes just to diet. There's definitely some improvement. I don't think there's any case where it's going to make it worse, right? this type of diet and lifestyle. I've never seen a situation where it's like XYZ condition and eating this way, it got worse. Even, you know, we prioritize protein and we can talk a lot about that, but even kidney disease, we see so many on our page. We have the success stories area, client success stories. And we have a whole, I made a whole section on kidneys and how people are at, you know, stage three kidney disease, and they go a whole nother one or two levels up on it with the kidney improvement, even though they're prioritizing protein, but it's the carbs they're cutting out that's helping with that. So
if you weren't eating this diet, do you think all the symptoms you're having would actually be worse? So, you know, the flip side of it.
Oh, I think, you know, 8 years ago, whenever this, 9 years ago when this started, I think it would have accelerated much faster.
Okay.
And, you know, maybe in a year or two, I would have been like, okay, this is unbearable. I got to do something about it. And I think it's probably a little bit psychological in that too, that, you know, I knew I was eating the way that would best help this type of thing. Right. And so if I go to a doctor, what else are they going to tell me? Like eat something else? No, I know enough about the science. I know the biology. I know I'm eating the right way, but a lot of times there's more than that. Like we're just saying, there's more than diet. And I think that maybe tripped me up, you know, 8, 9 years ago, that I thought, well, I'm doing the right thing, so I'll just keep on this. But yeah, I think it would have just accelerated things.
You're now part doing a, I guess, the SIRS journey. Can you talk a little bit about that in your experience so far, and then what your, I guess, your plan is with healing?
So one of the things about a year ago, I started doing hyperbaric oxygen treatments.
Oh, right.
And they really helped lower my pain, especially my joint pain, like my hip pain. My left hip is pretty bad, arthritic, and it makes it really, like, the reason we started coming to Hawaii in the winters, fall and winter, when the snow would start and the it would get cold, I'd be on crutches around our house because my hip pain was so bad. And in here, in this climate, it's much better. And so what I started doing hyperbaric, that hip pain was almost gone, and even after one or two sessions. And so that opened my eyes, like, oh, this is okay, this can help. And we actually got a soft hyperbaric chamber in our home. And I started doing it every day. And it got me to the point this summer where I was not taking any painkillers or anything to manage pain. I get through the day without anything like that. And that was very helpful. But at the end of the day, I'm still not fixing the root cause, right? I'm still not fixing the chronic inflammation. I'm helping inflammation a little bit with hyperbaric, but it's kind of like, it's just going to go back, you know. And I found that out here when we got here. We don't have a hyperbaric here. We have a small condo. Mm-hmm. And it lasted about 3-4 weeks where I was still kind of the same. I didn't need any painkillers or anything to manage pain. And then it started to increase. And that was end of November. And by the end of December, I was basically back to baseline. Like, I was in a lot of pain and I had to take a lot of stuff just to get through my day. We actually got another unit, a little smaller sitting unit here for hyperbaric. And that's, I started doing that a week or so ago, and it's starting to help again. But that's one thing that really helped. But again, I got to address the root cause. And that's why very thankful for you, Judy, hooking me up with an amazing SIRS doctor. And we've been doing treatments for about 3 months for the chronic inflammatory response, just trying to get that immune function back into working properly. And you talk to like Lyme specialists, a lot of them now have evolved to the point where they don't even worry about antibiotics or trying to kill the Lyme. They're worried about getting the immune function fixed so that the body can get rid of the Lyme on its own.
Right.
And shutting down that, you know, inflammatory response situation that comes with chronic Lyme, where it's always on. Working on immune, working on vascular blood flow. Those are the focuses now for all the top Lyme doctors. And so that's what I'm trying to do. I'm taking some peptides to help with blood flow and those kind of things. And I'm doing the treatment for SIRS. And then I'm also considering stem cell treatment, although that's not a cheap one. So I'm not taking that lightly, but I've heard some of the research I've seen on it is pretty amazing for getting the immune function back, especially autoimmune conditions. So I'm considering that.
Yeah, I think Tony Robbins wrote a book recently interviewing all the most famous, the future of medicine. And I think a lot of it's around stem cells. So I don't know if you've read that. I haven't looked into it too deeply yet. Supposedly it has all the latest research, but yes, you need to be very wealthy, from my understanding. But
and there's been some, cases too, quite a few people that I've had reach out and talk to that they have autoimmune disorder. And the stem cells kind of reprogram the immune system, and they actually are symptom free months and months later after that one treatment. So there's definitely some promise there. Mm-hmm. Again, I would guess that it's not a magic pill. It's going to work 100% for everybody. But I've tried so much at this point. I don't think one more thing's going to hurt to try. But it's just, the money is, of course, a big concern.
I love that you're not giving up, because I'm sure you've seen it too, but there's some people that we'll work with and it's just, I've worked with so many people, nothing works, or I've tried every single diet, nothing works. And I think that really affects people's ability to heal. There's so many stories of people given like a death date with cancer, you only have a certain amount of time to live. And then you see them live beyond that because they have the desire of, no, I'm not going to die from that. I think it was Lance Armstrong that had cancer in so many different parts of his body, and he fought through it and he overcame it. And so I think there is so much in the mindset of the belief of I can heal and I will get over this that can bring so much healing. So I look forward to you being a colleague of mine for many, many decades to come.
Thank you, Judy. I appreciate it.
Okay. So I wanted to shift a little bit to the protein. So you talked about kidneys. One of the biggest fears in a carnivore or a very heavy meat diet is if I eat too much meat, it will really affect my kidneys. My doctors are worried about my GFR or other kidney markers. Yeah. Is there any truth to that?
I don't believe there is. Not with, reasonable whole foods diets. Okay. So for example, if you're eating like multiple times a day, these like whey protein shakes and whatever, you're getting these huge amounts of, refined protein. Okay. Maybe there's some issues there, because that's about the only way you're going to get crazy amounts of protein in the diet. Right. I think that the important thing to start with is how much protein is too much, right?
Right.
Like that everybody throws around, low protein, high protein, moderate protein. And until you put numbers on it, it's really all kind of meaningless. I think what we recommend is moderate amounts of protein. Typically we'll say, at least 0.8 times your lean mass for protein goal for a day. So if a woman's, 150 pounds, 33% body fat, to make the math easy, that's 100 pounds of lean mass times 0.8, that's 80 grams of protein. You want to get at least that much every day. I think that's pretty reasonable. Now, it's hard to eat, if you're eating two or three times that much protein in a day, okay, maybe that's too much. But if you're eating whole foods, try to get, 300 grams of protein in with the whole foods, it's going to be tough, So again, that's why I say, I think within reason and the way we promote whole foods and all that, I don't think it's a concern at all. And the example we gave earlier, we've seen tons of people with kidney disease go the other direction. Eating this way improves their markers, improves their kidney function. And one other thing I would say about that too is one of the things that kidneys do, the kidneys are kind of like a muscle, in that if you've been chronically eating low protein, you're going to, once you start eating proper amounts of protein, the kidneys will start to work more. But they're like a muscle, right? They're getting stronger and they're, doing what they're designed to do. And so blood markers might shift a bit as your body adjusts and your kidneys get stronger, and then they come back in line. And it's really just the kidneys getting stronger like a muscle and learning how to, handle a proper amount of protein again.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I interviewed Dr. Donald Lehman. He's into the whole amino acid protein camp. Great. Yeah, he's wonderful. And he talks about how, so I asked him this very similar question. And he's like, I've never seen it in a study that makes sense. And I don't believe that's true at all. If anything, if you consume too much protein, your liver or your kidneys might get bigger because you're maybe consuming so much in one sitting, but it will not be damaging your kidneys. It's probably something else related.
Yeah, there's really been no study that points to the correlation of protein and kidneys. In fact, a lot of them point the other way.
So why is there a correlation between it then?
Well, there's a lot of things in the healthcare community that they took X, Y, and decided that Z was going to happen in this situation all the time. There's a lot of those things, like You can go down the line of, saturated fat leads to heart disease and, those kind of things. It's just a flawed line of thinking based on maybe some questionable studies or examples. And then they just kind of get stuck in it. The one thing about the healthcare community is it's really hard to move them off of something. Like when they've got an idea that this is what happens,
oh, right.
Get them to off of that, to think of a different way that it might be happening or to a different methodology. It's a glacial speed that they move, with this kind of things. And that's why we still have the food pyramid or whatever it's called right now. Is still there, and even with all the evidence against it, I think that's where a lot of it comes from. It's just that there was some initial early studies, and it's just now everybody thinks, well, protein's harder than the kidneys.
Right, right, and it makes sense. The 0.8 grams per 1 pound of lean body mass. Do you use that also for males as well, or different age groups?
Well, males will naturally have more lean mass, right? Because
right.
they'll have more
muscle.
That's
true. Yes.
And so that, it adjusts based on that. And that's okay. Generally what we do. And, when we talk about macros, and we think it's important to at least understand what your macros are or should be. And at least, for a few weeks or month, track your macros just so you know what you're eating.
Yes. Agreed.
Especially people coming from, very obese, very metabolically damaged, those people will almost always have leptin resistance. And so they don't get the same satiety signaling. And a lot of times they'll, overeat, and even eating nothing but carnivore. We get people a lot of times, it's quite frequent that will come to us that are just eating too much fat and they're gaining weight because they're just not getting the I'm full signal. And so at least tracking for a couple weeks or months to say, okay, this is about how much food equals this, because so many people don't know what's in their food. They don't know what protein and carbs and whatever's in their food. That gives you a baseline, right? Like, okay, I know about this much is what, is going to give me enough protein. And that's the key for us, is we want to make sure everybody's getting a proper amount of protein for their body.
Yes.
And we call it the protein goal. And if they hit that protein goal every day, and they keep carbs to a minimum or zero, now you just have fat, right? That's the only variable. And so then we adjust fat based on the goals. If you want to maintain, ramp the fat up some more. If you want to lose, wrap it down a little bit. If you want to break a stall, maybe wrap it down a little, even more for a day or two in a protein sparing day to force your body to use your own fat, body fat for fuel. That's the basic concept of what we do.
Yeah. And that makes sense in context. So hearing all of this, it makes sense. There's just some people in the carnivore space that will do protein sparing modified fast almost every day. And then I see hormonal issues coming into play, or there are older women. So let's just say there's people that have been chronically dieting forever. And so their metabolism is very low. And so they're trying to cut even more to lose weight. But now, in order to lose so much weight, they have to really dial down that fat if they're trying to get the baseline of protein. Because I agree with you. I think there's this trend right now that's super high fat, and it's crazy because they're cutting the protein to amounts that are so dangerous.
Get more fat. Yeah.
I know. It's so crazy. And I get it. Have some fat for hormones. I fully believe that too. But it's this fine toggling balance. And so I love that you say it depends on your goals. So what would you do with a person that maybe has hormonal issues? They've been under eating their whole life, but if they eat more fat, they may likely gain weight because they now cannot consume enough calories. Hey guys, I'm excited to share that I'll be speaking at Hack Your Health by KetoCon May 31st through June 2nd. You can come by and say hi while I do a book signing, or join me during the food addiction panel or the Triumphs in Troubleshooting on a Carnivore Diet panel on the main stage. Hack Your Health by KetoCon is the largest event in the U.S. focused solely on the science and stories of tools to improve your health journey. As part of the conference, there are over 200 vendors and 70 speakers that include medical professionals, practitioners, coaches, and experts. I love this event because it's the largest community gathering of like-minded people. I guarantee you, you'll make at least one friend. Make sure to get your 3-day pass and use code NWJ50 to get $50 off your 3-day general admission pass. Go to hackyourhealth.com and get tickets today. It's an incredible experience you don't want to miss. And if you're at the conference, make sure to come by and say hello. Remember, use code NWJ50 to get $50 off your tickets.
Well, if they've been chronically under eating and have metabolic adaptation that's occurred, we would kind of do not a reverse dieting, but you know, just make sure they're adding what we would call overfeeding days, which are, and this is something we recommend in general, which, you know, it's the community out there is kind of interesting. It's like, we put out a couple of protein sparing books as tools, and now people think we're nothing but protein sparing.
I know.
And
I was going to ask you that question,
like,
actually.
We eat protein sparing every day or something. And it's like, I've actually seen that in comments where somebody commented something not kind about my wife. And it said, well, she's just all protein sparing. That's why she's so thin. It's like, she eats more fat than most of you. Okay. She's in maintenance. She eats tons of fat. I mean, she's just really active. She runs every day. She's on her paddleboard. She's always out moving. I don't get, you know, it's a little frustrating. It's like, oh, you're just nothing but protein sparing now. No, we've been keto for 20 years and we're not going to change from that. Keto and carnivore.
I completely understand that. And it's one of the, I think people just want a group, whether we're influencers or coaches or therapists, they want to say Craig and Maria are protein sparing, modify fast. I actually think of you as like kid keto people. That's how like my vision of you, because we have children of the same age. You had a kid's cookbook recently of keto based. Yeah. So that's like my mindset. Granted, there have been protein sparing modified fast books. And so there is some of that, but I don't think of you both as just the PSMF, but I do see the labeling. So, I mean, I'll put out something about higher fat and someone will say something, well, what about the Emmerich? So I do see it. I totally get it. And I think there are just people want to bucket us. But then if you listen to these conversations, you see you're not this one dimensional person. And I loved your keto book. You explained the science so easily so that the average person can understand it. And I loved it. And I've told that to Maria in person before. So I just think that it's unfair and I agree with you, but you can't fight the internet. You'll never win. You know what I mean?
And again, it's all back to these terms, right? Like there was another influencer, and again, not here to name names or, you know, some of these people I get along great with and they're just doing different methods and that's fine. Sure. But they posted they're eating a stick of butter a day, a thing that's kind of happening right now. And it was a day of food and it was like a stick of butter. It was this certain amount, these meats that were going with it. And I was like, and it was one meal a day that they were doing. Oh. Mm-hmm. So I went, okay. I looked at it. And I was like, okay, I'm going to throw this in Chronometer quick. And I tried to do my best to estimate how much it was. And, you know, and it came out to like 2,400 calories. It was, you know, 140 grams of protein, 60, 70 grams of fat. Or 100, maybe 180 grams of fat. I'm like, for somebody, she was in maintenance. She's pretty tall. I'm like, that's normal.
Sure.
for macros, but I'm a protein sparing person and they're a super high fat person. And it's like, no, for somebody in maintenance that's tall, that, you know, doesn't have any weight to lose.
And
I would prescribe the exact same macros. I wouldn't prescribe the same diet. I would want to get the fat from the animals. Those whole cellular fats are just better. And versus a refined fat, like a, you know, butter. For me personally, it's better, you know, to just get the fat from the food. But the macros themselves, I would have prescribed the same macros for that person.
It is interesting that this whole butter thing has come to play. And I've done a separate podcast on it. And it's just some of my clients are jumping on the bandwagon of the excess butter. And so we do blood work on them occasionally. And a lot of them, their triglycerides are shooting through and they don't see that. So they just feel, oh my gosh, I'm sleeping better through the night. Granted, a lot of them are not even eating. Like if someone was eating 140 grams of protein, I would have no complaints if you're going to do the higher fat. You probably will gain weight, but otherwise I'm not going to complain. But a lot of them are actually reducing their protein. And some of them are in their 50s and 60s where you will be losing muscle mass already. But then they start eating maybe 50 grams of protein or 60 grams and then eating the sticks of butter, or they're getting full off just the butter and not even adding the protein until maybe dinner. Dr. Donald Lehman just said to me that people over the age of 60, half of them will never walk again because of a fall, a hip fall. And then 33% of them will die within the year of having that hip fall. And so even if keto is muscle sparing, I don't want to risk and say, I will trust that this butter will carry me over and I'm not going to eat my protein amounts. I just think that's such a risk that
Absolutely. And especially, like you say, when as we age, there's a leucine curve shift, right?
Yes.
So you get a certain amount of leucine to trigger muscle protein synthesis and build muscle. And when you get older, it shifts. And so you need even more leucine.
Right.
And so thus even more complete proteins just to maintain your muscle. And if you go in the other direction, I mean, it's a bad form of, yes, keto's muscle sparing to some extent,
right,
but it's not to an infinite extent, right? Like there's certain biological functions that require glucose, and it, you know, red blood cells, they don't have mitochondria. You need glucose to fuel them. Your skin is constantly being replaced and shed. So you need proteins and you need amino acids. Okay. And if the body is not getting enough through the diet, it's going to use what's available. And think about the body as a system. Where would it be the easiest to pull some protein and not cause too much problems? Your skin is constantly being shed and replaced. Like you don't replace some for a while and you're going to start having problems, right? Like you have like exposed areas, organs, the body does not want to pull from the organs.
Right.
Like not at all, if possible, right? There's nothing good from taking protein from organs. So you're left with basically your muscle, which pull some out of the muscle. You're still fine. May not even notice it at first, right? So it's going to take that protein, gluconeogenesis, it's going to get the glucose it needs to, you know, fuel certain brain neurons and your blood, red blood cells and all that. That is what's going to happen. Whether you're in a keto state of, you know, that does help with that, it doesn't totally mitigate it.
Yeah.
So protein is the most important macronutrient by far, in my view.
Have at least the baseline, the fundamental
yes.
amounts of protein. And there, if you need hormone support, then yes, like you said, it's the overeating days. And so I tell my clients, you're going to probably gain weight in the beginning working with me because I need you to hit the protein. And if you're trying to hit 70 to 80% fat on that level of basic protein, you may end up overeating. But over time, as you heal, then maybe we could dial down the fat. And I think when people just talk in percentages, it's just, these aren't numbers. So we don't even know how much protein you're consuming in a day. You just say you're eating 80% fat. What does that mean? If you're eating 1200 calories, and a lot of the fats don't have the nutrition as the meats do in itself. So
that's, I think, an important aspect too, is to not undervalue how much protein can help with healing.
Right.
Okay. Yes. Fat aspects that can help heal and all that, but put protein and fat from the same, you know, a ribeye, separate the nutrition in the fat and separate the nutrition in the protein. And that protein is going to wipe out that fat
right.
every day, all the vitamins and minerals, right? And so what's important for healing? Amino acids for repair, if it's repairing something, vitamins and minerals to help your body heal and get better. Most of that's happening from the protein, you know? And so that, I think, is a really important point.
Yeah. I think the only part where I would also say the fat is important, I do agree that I think all of that is true. So all the amino acids, the nutrients, but let's say someone is super stressed and they're tapping on cortisol a lot. In order for your body to support the cortisol load, it will need the fat. And so it will use the cholesterol within your body, but over time, it will try to produce as much cortisol as possible. And it will start pulling from the outer layer of your cells, which is made from fat. So if you have an abundance of fat in that way, but cortisol also needs B vitamins, which you would get from meat. Yeah. So it's just this fine balance. These nuances aren't just discussed online as easily.
Yeah, no, I totally. And, you know, the fat is important for a lot of things. For example, again, back to the protein sparing thing.
Yeah.
If anybody read the book and the actual outline of what we say, they would never say the stuff they are is commented online about it, or never, like you said, we see people that are doing it every day. Like even on our macro calculator, we didn't give them a thing they could select where they just got protein sparing macros. If you select that option in our macro calculator, you get your keto macros and your protein sparing macros, because you're only supposed to do it maybe 1 to 3 days a week at most. And then you go to your keto macros on the other days. And in our book, we talk about if you're doing 2 or 3 protein sparing days in 1 week, also add an overfeeding day that week, which is basically maintenance calories, which would basically be, you know, just adding fat, because we don't ever really add carbs in our protocols. So, you know, that, you know, I think that's important. And people, I think they think, well, one protein sparing day, we're pretty good. I'm just going to keep doing them. And then you get run into these other hormonal issues, metabolic adaptation issues, and all these kind of things.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. It's very easy to find something that works and then say, it's just like fasting. If fasting works, then I might as well fast for 7 days and I'll lose weight even faster, right? And then you're breaking down more muscle. And so,
what happens when you break down muscle? Your lean mass goes down, your BMR goes down. And guess what? You need less calories now just to maintain. Right. You know, it's just a vicious cycle.
You mentioned while you were speaking that you said our bodies need a little bit of glucose. So a lot of the carb advocates will say, see, therefore, why make it so difficult for the body and get the protein converted to glucose? Why not just eat carbs? Can you explain why we don't need the carbs to support our body?
So the body's really good at making glucose. It can do it a couple different ways. The primary way is taking protein. Gluconeogenesis turns it into glucose. You can also get a small amount of glucose from your fat cells, your triglyceride molecules, which is how your fat is stored in your fat cells. A triglyceride molecule is three free fatty acid molecules linked together with a glycerol backbone. And the first thing the body does when it wants some fuel, when you don't have enough carbs around, so you're keto or carnivore, and it's going to tap your fat for energy because it doesn't have the glucose to tap. What it'll do is cleave off the glycerol and you got three free fatty acids. The cells love running on that fuel. So the free fatty acids go into the cells and get used for fuel. The glycerol, it can go to the liver and three glycerol molecules make a glucose molecule. I think it's a little less than 10% of energy as glucose from your fat stores, right? So that can mitigate, you know, some of the glucose as well, but a lot of it's coming from turning protein into it. So if you eat enough protein, the body's going to use the protein in the diet to make glucose when it needs more glucose instead of using it off the body.
There are some people that say that eating just carnivore makes them hypoglycemic. Maybe in the middle of the night, they're waking up. In the morning, their blood sugar is really high. Is this an issue? And does that mean, I mean, I know you just said the body is really efficient at making glucose, but for these people, does it mean that they need carbs?
So there's a couple things going on there. You know, I'd say there's probably two or three situations that are happening there. The first I would address is, when you're in the transition phase, you can have some more glucose excursions and things going on because the body is kind of switching from being a primarily glucose burner to primarily a fat burner. And there's some adaption process there. I would say beyond the adaption, you know, period, if you're still having those kind of issues, it could be one of two things, probably one of two or three things. One thing, it could be just dawn phenomena, which, you know, cortisol rises in the morning to wake you up. And that cortisol rise will dump some glucose from the liver into the bloodstream. And so your morning blood sugar can go up a bit. If you're not burning sugar as your primary fuel, the body is using fat. And so a little bit of glucose coming out, it's not really using too much of it. It can stay a little higher longer. If you're a glucose burner, it would start to, you know, it's all, you're basically only burning glucose. So a little rise, it immediately starts using it. So you don't really notice it as much as you do when you're keto or carnivore, because you're not burning glucose as much anymore. So that could be one thing. What we typically tell people in that scenario is move a good, complete protein meal to earlier in the morning. Mm-hmm. That will kind of drive the glucose down and be nice, and it'll be lower throughout the day then. As far as what was the first part about sleeping?
So some people will wake up in the middle of the night. It might be a transition though. But they just turned carnivore, or maybe they've been it for a few months, but their sleep has just become dysregulated.
That's usually a couple things. Number one of the things it can be is just, especially if it's early, is electrolytes. Mm-hmm. What happens is somebody's getting dehydrated, which, you know, you cut the carbs retain water. So it flushes out the water when you cut the carbs out, which is good. You don't want the retained water, but with the water goes electrolytes. So you need to kind of be mindful and replenish them. We actually see some good success with people that take some salt capsules before bed. So just a couple electrolyte tablets and they'll sleep much better in the evening. They won't get the urge to go up to go to the bathroom and those kind of things. It can really help with sleep. And actually, the people that do like a carb up or something before bed to help us sleep, it's doing the same thing.
I never thought about that.
Carbs retain water, right?
Right.
So you add some carbs, it just helps you retain water for the evening, right? So we just add electrolytes instead.
So I try to do the research of what is it about carbs at night that everyone says, oh, I sleep so much better. And then I saw something about how certain carbs will then support the facilitation of serotonin becoming melatonin. And I was like, maybe that's it. But I never thought about that carbs make you retain water, which then support your minerals more overnight. And that makes sense.
Yeah. And also the, actually to me, it's commoner as well, because human growth hormone increases a couple hours after you go to bed. Mm-hmm. If you haven't eaten right before bed, if you eat right before bed, insulin's an antagonist to it. And so it'll reduce the effect, and you want human growth hormone going up,
right?
And especially when you sleep, it helps the body repair and everything. And so when you add those carbs right before bed, you're affecting that, which I think in the long term is going to affect you negatively as well.
Yeah, I agree with that. So I always tell people, when people say, oh, I just added carbs back, and these are healthy, natural carbs, so they're whole food carbs, and they're not bad. If you can tolerate it, fine. If you're metabolically healthy, but I always say, give me 6 months to a year and tell me if it still has those beneficial effects. Cause I think people still initially feel better, but I just don't know if downstream they do feel the same. And it makes sense.
I think the part two is, you know, you talked about carbs in general, as far as people needing them or not. Mm-hmm. I think the problem is adding them in is, especially with people that we deal with that are very metabolically damaged, yes, very obese, very, you know, insulin resistant or whatnot. It's the hormonal aspect of the carbohydrates and the psychological aspect of, yes, the carbohydrates. When they add them in, we get so often the, you know, I was going to have one cupcake at this party, and 6 months later, I gained all the weight back because I completely fell off the wagon with that one cupcake, right? That's what can happen. And that's not, you know, that's not a metabolic, you know, like biology thing. It's psychological and hormonal. It's the body, you know, you get those hunger hormones start coming back, the cravings start coming back, the psychological aspects. I mean, all that starts to happen when you add a lot of those carbohydrate foods back in.
Yeah, I see that with my clientele. We have an intake form and we'll say, you know, have you done carnivore? Have you tried different versions? And we had a few, especially when fruit and honey was first coming into the space. Yeah. And some of them would say, I tried the fruit and honey and then I fell into a full on binge. And now I'm basically eating the standard American diet. And they got so desperate because they couldn't get back on. So they come to start working with us. And that's why I became so against sharing that, because I think for most people that are desperate enough to try carnivore, they're sick enough that they can't handle that. If everyone could handle a fruit a day or a little bit of honey, we wouldn't be in the place we are in.
Exactly. And of all the things too, with honey, for me, it's kind of strange because, you know, there's such a stigma about high fructose corn syrup, right? Because it's high in fructose and the effects of that on the liver. And well, honey's even higher in fructose.
Yes.
Honey's very high in fructose. So, you know.
I think it's because some people say that there's like antioxidants in it and there's certain like healing effects and antimicrobial.
The trace amounts that are, the trace amount. I mean, if you put that on a chart, you would, no. Actually, I was thinking of another chart I had made. Maybe I can share, but that's for another time.
Okay. You know, as you're talking about some of the carnivore influencers, what's interesting is I know that there's also this, there's a few magic pill, interesting beliefs in the carnivore community that just the science goes out once you're carnivore. So calories don't matter. You can never gain weight on carnivore. Yeah. Even if you gain weight, just keep eating. And then eventually your metabolism will regulate and you'll become thin again. You don't ever need a fast because if it's carnivore, your insulin will never go up. It's just these crazy things. Yeah. And do you see some of these thoughts that then affect your clients?
All the time.
Okay,
you know, and the ideas of like, you know, you're stalled, add more fat. Okay. You still stalled or gaining, add more fat. And it's like, you know, and it really bothers me because these people need help.
I know
that is hurting them. And we even had a client that came to us from some of that type of information, and they were like 140 pounds, a man, fairly tall. So very, very lean, right?
Right.
He's type 2 diabetic. And the reason is because his personal fat threshold was really low. Mm-hmm. Personal fat threshold is essentially, you probably heard this, that, you know, you make new fat cells when you're young, and at a certain age, you stop making new fat cells and you just kind of fill up and shrink the fat cells you have when you gain or lose weight. that leads to a situation where you have essentially a fat threshold, right? Where you can only fill your fat cells so full. And if you only have so many fat cells, once you fill the fat cells too much, they become insulin resistant. Mm-hmm. They say, reject insulin because I can't store any more fat in me. I'm too full. And so that's why you can get somebody's 100 and we've had women that are 105 pounds and raging type 2 diabetic, like out of control, insulin and everything and glucose, because they don't have hardly any fat cells, but they're all stuffed. And the body's like, okay, now where do you put the fat? If it sits in the blood, that's sky high triglycerides. Well, it starts pushing it into the organs, into the liver, into the pancreas. And it's like, you know, this total metabolic dysfunction that happens, metabolic syndrome. On the other end, we've had clients. We had one client. He was 530 pounds, I want to say, when he started. His A1C was 5.4 and his fasting glucose was like 96.
Wow.
I believe he actually had a genetic mutation or whatever that he could make new fat cells when most of us can't. And he would just kept making new fat cells as his body got bigger and bigger. And he metabolically didn't look diabetic at all. You know, it's crazy. But anyway, back to the topic there. This man came to us. He was very lean, but type 2 diabetic. And knowing that your personal fat threshold, the last thing that person should do is add lots of fat.
Oh, yeah, right.
Where's the body going to put it, right? And so that's what this person was telling him. And guess what happened? His insulin started going up. His glucose, he was like, fasting glucose was up to like 200. And they just kept telling him to add fat because the body, it's in fuel oversupply, right? It's got all this fuel and it doesn't know what to do with it. And so, because there's no place to store it like it would be normally. And so we got him and his glucose came way down, his insulin came way down. And what you're saying too on that, people think insulin has no rise with fat. Your insulin does go up when you eat fat. It's not as much as protein and not as much as carbs, but it does go up and it has to, because think about it. If you eat a bunch of fat and it comes into the bloodstream, right now at rest, we're both kind of just sitting here. You've got maybe 100 calories of total fuel in your blood. That's all the fat, all the ketones, all the glucose, 100 calories. So you eat a 1,000-calorie meal, there's a lot of fuel coming in, right? And if the body doesn't store that off, you could die. You know, any of those too high, you know, alcohol, any of them, you die if you have too much in the blood. And so if insulin didn't rise when you ate fat and you had 1,000 or even 200, 300 calories of fat coming into the blood, you'd have sky high triglycerides and, you know, threaten death if the body didn't store that away and put it in your fat cells, right? And that's what insulin does. It's a smaller rise, but it still stores away that fat.
Yeah, I saw something from Dr. Ted Naiman a while ago where he said, I know a lot of people in the keto space don't think fat triggers insulin at all, but it's just maybe a delayed effect. And so you may not see the rise in your CGM or any conversion of it. If you're waking up and you feel really full or certain markers are off in the morning, it's likely because you had an insulin effect from the fat that you, the over fat you're consuming. And that made so much sense because I do see people that are swearing they're just carnivore and their insulin's maybe at 8, which ideal is probably 5. So yeah. I can totally see that.
Well, it's two things. A lot of times in those cases, it's too much fat in the diet that the body is trying to deal with the insulin. And the other thing about insulin, people look at insulin as a storage hormone, and that's one of its jobs. But I also look at insulin as primarily, or probably maybe a bigger role, is holding back fuel from your fat stores from flooding the bloodstream. Because again, it doesn't want all that fat in the bloodstream. It wants to keep it under control. So it's almost like a net on your fat cells holding back the fat from flooding into the bloodstream. When you have too much fat in the diet and it's, now it's got that added load, especially if you've got diabetes and you're insulin resistant, now insulin's not working as well because of the insulin resistance. You add a bunch of fat, now it's got to deal with that. And maybe there's some carbs too. And now you get fasting glucose that goes up because insulin has more stuff to worry about doing, including getting the fat stored away. And a lot of times those high people that get a higher morning blood glucose, it's because they ate too much fat the day before. And so if you're eating no carbs and suddenly you get this, why did my glucose, my fasting glucose too high this morning? if you overate fat the day before, again, a bigger overall load on insulin to do its job results in a higher fasting glucose the next day.
I also see if people are eating, like, let's say they're eating a lot of dry jerkies and they just made it at home. So it's very lean meats and they eat a lot. Maybe they have a pound or two a few hours before bed. I also see blood sugar go high up in that way too.
Yeah. I mean, like we said, it's you need insulin to use protein too. So there's definitely a load that will be put on the insulin. Again, especially if you're metabolic damaged or insulin resistant. You know, anything that adds to that. But the key about that situation is that to reverse the insulin resistance, you want to shrink the fat cells, right? Because the fat cells are insulin resistant because they got too much fat in them. So you need to shrink the fat cell a bit to reduce the insulin resistance of the fat cell. And then you want to maintain or grow muscle because that gives glucose someplace to go.
Right.
Right. So the more muscle you have, the more places the body has to put glucose. You know, eating the protein, like you said, yeah, it might have a short-term increase in fasting glucose, but in that case, I wouldn't be as worried because you're going in the right direction. You're reducing your fat cells and maintaining or building muscle.
Yeah, it'll be tricky for the average person, I think, to figure that out. It's so many different nuances, but...
Context is key. And again, what we try to do is to stick with whole foods. Yes. And so instead of adding the stick of butter on top of the steak, just... the fat that comes with the steak, you know, that kind of thing is a lot easier to think.
Yeah. And I think if anyone is doing the high fat and they feel really good, and when I say high fat, I really mean like the stick of butter, as you're mentioning, I would check your triglycerides because I have seen enough clients where, especially if they also have an autoimmune. So I've seen some clients, their antibodies go up because maybe they're not able to tolerate that processed dairy. But the other thing is I'm seeing higher triglycerides because I don't think their body can handle that level of fat and they're already somewhat insulin resistant. So it's just something to think about. Yes, trust your body. If you're feeling better, great, but also do some lab work to make sure that everything is moving in the right direction.
Well, and especially the good point about the butter and the dairy, especially because you know, people with autoimmune disorders, people have Hashimoto's, you know, autoimmune thyroid. Yes. First thing we say is cut 100% of dairy and gluten, of course, which hopefully, you know, we have no gluten in anything we do, but because, you know, people talk about gluten, which is a problem, but you know, more people have a sensitivity to dairy than gluten.
Right.
And so, you know, that's another component of it. That, you know, the stick of butter a day kind of thing is neglecting, I think.
Yeah. And I've seen that. I've seen that in my clientele, just where antibodies have shot up. They were maybe maintaining at like 50 and now they're at like 350 and they would have never known, but we just pulled blood work on them and we see it. And then we asked them, what is the difference in your diet? And they said, I've added a lot of butter. And that's how we started seeing. And that was the beginning of my concern of the this butter fat that's been going on.
Yeah, definitely. We see it all the time. And the number one thing Maria has always said with her clients for 20 years is if they're stalled, cut out dairy. It almost always helps with inflammation as well as weight loss.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. Where can people find you? I know you have so many books. Are they all on Amazon? Do you have a site? I know you also do coaching and then you also have a practitioner program. If you could tell us a lot about all of it.
Oh, thank you. KetoMaria.com is the best place to go for all of it. It just, I created that little webpage just for like, the whole thing is like links to all of our stuff.
Okay.
You know, our blog is there where there's thousands of free recipes and information. Our keto-adapted.com is our website for like selling our eBooks and support and coaching programs and all of that. On bottom, we have links to all of our social media accounts. So ketomaria.com is a place to go to get to everything.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate just the candor. I love that sometimes when I am telling people in the carnivore space that what you're hearing is not always true, that you don't have to carnivore harder. It's not that you're using seasonings or that you're using coffee or that you really need this higher fat without the protein or that calories actually do matter. People, I hear a lot of the negative talk to me, but I know just from working with people other than my N=1. And I think you see the same. And I believe that's why you're so honest. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Judy. I really appreciate that.
I hope you enjoyed this interview. It was a pleasure to sit down with Craig. He took time out of his busy day to just chat with me. And we just talked a lot of real talk, as you can tell. I hope that this conversation really makes you think about a lot of the recommendations given to the wellness space. I know it's easy to follow someone that has a big follower account or that has an MD or some type of letters behind their names, but we have to always use our thoughts and our logic to think, does this recommendation work for me, whether it's physically, mentally, emotionally? And if you're not in the same space, your same medical history, previous history with either disordered eating or mental illness or even obesity, then they might not be the right fit for you. That's when I think the clinical practice is so important. As much as I do so much research and write books, I do a lot of my recommendations for the online community based off of what I learned from my amazing clients. This is where I know the science hits the road to see if it works for the average real person. And for sometimes it just doesn't work as well. So I hope you take that into heart. And when you hear recommendations, even if they look like the most perfect person and live the best life, you just don't know if it will work for you. So I hope this conversation really just gives you that pause to think about things. And then to also know that if nutrition is not getting you to the A+ level of health, if you have been doing keto or carnivore or paleo or some type of really clean diet for a very long time and you're still unwell, it's likely not the diet that's the problem. I hope that these conversations really give you tools and levers to help you get to root cause healing. For somebody, it may be Lyme. For somebody else, it may be chronic inflammatory response syndrome. For somebody, it could be heavy metals. We just don't know. But if we clean up the diet, we have a lot less noise to figure out what may be root cause if the diet is not enough. Okay, guys, I hope you enjoyed this conversation. Make sure to eat a lot of meat. Take care of your bodies because it is the only place you have to live. I will talk to you later. Bye, guys. Thanks for listening to the Nutrition with Judy podcast. If you liked what you heard today, please make sure to leave a 5-star review on your favorite podcast app so more listeners like you can find the show. If you want more practitioner care and support, head over to nutritionwithjudy.com/groups so you can get more real talk about carnivore, the environment, and root cause healing. You can also find my content on Nutrition with Judy's YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Make sure to sign up for my weekly newsletter and learn more about in-depth articles with infographics at nutritionwithjudy.com/articles. You can find my 2 books, Carnivore Cure and The Complete Carnivore Diet for Beginners, on carnivorecure.com and amazon.com. At the heart of Nutrition with Judy's practice, our mission lies with a deep, unwavering passion for service and community. We will continue to empower you to have the knowledge and tools to live a life nearly symptom-free, because we firmly believe in healing and wellness for all.